Welcome back to Horoscope Witch. It's Mal, and happy Taurus full moon. Actually, I am a day late to the Taurus full moon, but you know, all in divine timing, and it's Mercury retrograde, and I just got back from New York City. So I actually feel like right now in this moment, it's November 13th, 2019. I feel like this is the perfect moment for me to be recording the full moon Taurus full moon podcast, I should say the Taurus full moon sermon, since we've started calling these my horoscope witch moon sermons. But I really feel good right now. I feel good energy. I feel like it's the exact right time to talk about this Taurus full moon. And I also asked you guys on Instagram a couple days ago when I was stuck in the airport. Thanks, Mercury retrograde. It actually wasn't that bad. I was flying from New York City to Chicago, and my flight kept getting delayed. So I was probably in the airport about 4 extra hours. But honestly, I felt really proud of myself, and I was telling my therapist this yesterday, but I'll tell you guys this too. I have a lot of transportation anxiety in general. It's not just about planes. It's about any kind of transportation. I tend to have anxiety, which sounds really weird because if you know me, and you've been listening to this podcast for a while, you've probably heard about like my travels, and I've probably taken like the longest flight that you can take, right? Like I've been in an airplane for like 16 hours before. So it's not like I'm an inexperienced traveler, but nevertheless, I find that, you know, regardless of how much I have traveled, I still have that anxiety. I still have that fear about traveling. And it's definitely not about me fearing that the plane is going to crash, just because I always say that we're all intuitive, but you know, I believe that my intuition is sort of like if the plane was going to crash, I trust that I would know that and I wouldn't get on. Like, but also if for some reason I was supposed to die in a plane crash, then that is what it is. But I always think back to like those stories about, like a 9/11, you know, people woke up and just had a bad feeling that they shouldn't go to work, or like they woke up and they had a bad feeling that they shouldn't get on this plane or go to the airport or whatnot. Like, I kind of trust that if I was not meant to get on a plane, I would really, really know it. So I don't necessarily worry about plane crashing. But I will say that travel in general, it does induce fear within me, but it's about a fear of losing control. And I think that's actually why so many people hate going to airports. It's because literally nothing is in your control, pretty much. The only thing that's in your control is really your thoughts and your breath and your attitude. So I was actually proud of myself that when my flight was getting delayed and I was sort of faced with a dilemma, oh my God, like what if this flight gets canceled and it's going to be like midnight and I'm going to be in the airport in New York City, and then I'm going to have to Uber back to my friend's or my cousin's house that I was staying in, and that's going to be a pain in the ass, and then I'm going to have to la la la. But then I just like quickly accepted, and I accepted, okay, you know, this plane could get canceled. I'm just going to accept it. I'm just going to focus in on my breath. And I was able to do that and stay really calm for like basically the 4 hours that the plane was delayed. And it did end up taking off. But I will also say that there was a point, sorry, I'm blabbing about this, but there was a point in the airport where I was sitting next to what Julia Cameron, the author of The Artist's Way, she would call crazy makers. So if you listen to my first episode about The Artist's Way that I put out probably about a month ago, there is a concept in that book called the crazy maker, which is someone who kind of like enjoys, like, you know, I don't know, like, enjoys exacerbating drama. So I was actually in the airport sitting next to, like, kind of a group of people who had kind of, like, started talking to each other. They started, like, kind of really loudly complaining about the current situation. They were voicing worst case scenarios. There was a lot of complaints, and I literally was having anxiety just, like, listening to them. So I got up and I, like, moved and I, like, put in my headphones and I was like, you know what, like, I don't need to be, like, I'm an empath, I need to be aware of the energy that I could be soaking up from others, and I'm not gonna let them cause me anxiety. So I got up and moved. But anyways, point being that yes, travel is anxiety inducing because it brings up our fear of loss of control. But if we can come into some radical acceptance, I think when we're faced with travel difficulties, it actually causes us, or it actually saves us, a lot of suffering. So that was my lesson. But I had a really fun time in New York City. I'll say one more thing about New York City. I could live there for sure. Like, some people are like, oh, I like it, but I could never live there. I could definitely live in New York City. Like, I really liked it. But it's the kind of city that if you go into it, if you arrive in New York City, whether you're just on vacation or maybe you're actually moving there, if you are expecting something out of that city, like, you have great expectations, I think you will be greatly disappointed. But if you arrive at that city and you just kind of, I don't know, like, Wheel of Fortune, kind of the cards coming to mind, like, if you kind of say, okay, I'm trusting in the universe, you know, NYC, take my hand, show me the way, I'm not going to expect anything from you, but I'm going to let you sort of surprise me along the way, that's how you got to approach that city. Because again, if you have expectations, I think you'll be disappointed. But if you kind of just have no expectations and kind of go with the flow, I think that's when you really see, like, the beauty of the city. But overall, I felt actually very at peace, which was weird because I expected to feel kind of chaotic. And I expected the people to be meaner than they were. But yeah, it was fun. So thanks for hanging in there. And I've taken a little bit of a break from this podcast. I went on, should I just start calling my vacation sabbatical? I think so. I went on a little bit of a sabbatical. But now we're back for the Taurus full moon sermon. And like I said, the Taurus full moon, it actually happened yesterday on November 12th, but today's November 13th. But I really feel like right now, it's a good time to make this podcast. I think we'll definitely still be feeling this full moon for a little bit here. And anything that I say, I actually want to set the intention that even though we're talking about an exact moment in time, I want to set the intention for this podcast that this, even though we're talking about the Taurus full moon on November 12th, 2019, this podcast is timeless. So whenever you find this podcast, whenever you listen to this, I'm kind of setting the intention that hopefully it will still resonate with you in some way, even if the Taurus full moon is long gone. Although it's important to note that full moons, like, they're in a cycle, right? So we're not just talking about 24 hours of energy. We're talking about multiple cycles. Each moon, new moon, and full moon is a part of cycles that last 30 days, cycles that last 24 hours, cycles that last 3 years, cycles that last 12 years. So, you know, what really is time when we when we talk about astrology? That's like my excuse during Mercury retrograde. What really is time? My excuse for being late. Time is an illusion, actually. So let's talk actually about first this full moon's in Taurus, like I said, and I kind of just want to highlight some themes we may be facing during this time that have to do with the shadow side of Taurus, actually. And before I go anywhere, I'm not talking smack about Taurus, okay? So, you know, when I'm talking about the shadow sides, and if you are a Taurus, I'm really not trying to throw shade at you. And just, you know, I think that all signs have a shadow side. So, but let's actually talk about the shadow side of Taurus, because it does relate, I think, to this full moon and the themes that we're trying to sort of reconcile with. So, shadow side of Taurus. The routines in our life that maybe don't serve us, but we do them anyways. So this could be us being stubborn about something that actually makes our life harder. So let's take, I'm trying to think of an example. Let's say that every day you drive to work and you take a certain route, and suddenly your normal route has a lot of construction. So this actually delays you about 20 minutes every single day. So you could actually, you know, find a different route to work that's easier. And hey, maybe this route, you know, you discover that along this new route, there's like a drive-through Dunkin' Donuts, and now you can get Dunkin' Donuts on your way to work, something like that. But the shadow side of Taurus is, no, I'm not going to do the new thing because I'm so used to the old thing. Even if the old thing, like the old route, has become outdated, and actually now the old route is delaying me and making my life harder, I'm still going to do the old thing because it is what is familiar. That is the Taurus shadow side. And even if you are not a Taurus, I would say that this Taurus full moon in general is going to be highlighting those areas where you're still kind of taking that old route that's actually making your life harder, and it's time to kind of find a new route. Now, we're still going to the same destination, right? We're still going to work. And we do have to honor that at one point, that route was suiting us. That route made sense. That route made sense to take to work. Okay. But now for some reason, it just doesn't make so much sense anymore. Okay. And I'm going to quote the great Jan Spiller on this. This quote comes from Astrology for the Soul, the book called Astrology for the Soul. It's a great book about North Nodes and South Nodes. I'll put it in the show notes. There's a phrase that she has in there about Taurus South Nodes, and it is the phrase that has stuck with me. And yes, my South Node is in Taurus, North Node is Scorpio. But the phrase she says for those people are, my way the hard way, which I should just freaking get that tattooed on my forehead, because that seems to be like the story of my life. My way the hard way. But that is really what was coming to me. Like, in this full moon, is there something that we're being so stubborn about? It's like, yeah, I have to do it this way. No, you don't. You don't. You don't have to do it that way. There's an easier way. You just kind of have to take a step back, open your mind a little bit, get a fresh perspective, and see where we can have the more, it's not even about being efficient. It's just about having it be easier. Okay. Like this moon, there's something about it that's inviting us into an easier way of living. Okay. And, it's kind of like, actually, Spirit was giving me this image of, like, a little kid. You know when you're a little kid and you're, like, really attached to, like, certain articles of clothing? Like, maybe when you were little, you had, like, a pair of pajamas, or you had a t-shirt that was, like, your favorite thing. And you know, when you're a kid, though, you grow. So when you're a child, you grow out of your clothes really quickly. So in Taurus, representing the period of our formative years as like toddlers going into early childhood. So, you know, when you're a kid, you outgrow your favorite pair of pajamas, you might still wear them, even if they're too small. And that is also an image that I kind of felt related to this full moon. It's sort of like the too small clothing, the road that no longer serves. And again, this idea that change is hard. Actually, I think this full moon is inviting us into seeing that change can make our lives easier. Change can be a very beautiful and relieving process. And I'll get to the cards, but no surprise, I pulled the Death card and I also pulled the World, which I was like, oh, damn spirit. Like you're really giving it to us on this full moon. But let's talk about the astrology that was kind of leading up to this full moon. And now that we're kind of talking, because today is Wednesday, the 13th. So in retrospect, think back to like Monday, 11/11, and then Tuesday, yesterday, 11/12. So on 11/11, I think it's important to note that the sun conjunct Mercury retrograde. They both the sun and Mercury met up in the same degree of Scorpio. They were like, hey, what's up, homie? Fist pump. How you doing? Good to see ya. Good to be this close to you. So what happens when sun conjuncts Mercury in astrology? Students of astrology, let's meditate on that for a second. How do we synthesize this? How do we put this together? Sun, it's about our identity. It's about our ego. It's about our what we really came to the earth to embody. That's the energy of our sun. Mercury is about our memories, our thought process, our communication skills. Actually, sometimes it's about our intuition. And both sun and Mercury met up in Scorpio. The archetype of Scorpio, it's about unearthing the past. It's about transformation. It's about sort of abrupt life, death moments. Of course, I mean that in a metaphorical way. So if we synthesize all that together, I really think that sun conjunct Mercury that happened on 11/11, I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of us in the past couple of days have been having new insights on old issues. I think we've been having maybe realizations that have been a long time coming. So I don't think these are necessarily realizations. I mean, they could be like stuff like, oh, I need to get out of this relationship, or I need to leave this job, or I need to move cities. Like, it could be shit like that. But actually, Scorpio, because it's this conjunction happened in Scorpio, I think it's much deeper. I think it's more realizations about how we've been operating. And operating on an internal level. So when I say, you know, in the past couple days, and I think in the next week too, we are and will be getting new insights on old issues. I think these are our issues that we've actually been attached to for a long time. And Taurus, because Taurus, the shadow side of Taurus is that stubbornness. Sometimes in life, we are attached to our suffering. We're stubborn about our letting go of our suffering because the monkey mind tells us that our suffering actually keeps us safe. And I also think there's an aspect to this full moon energy that, you know, now we're realizing shit. I've really been attached to this way I've been suffering. I've really been buying into this story that actually makes my life harder. And you know what, though? We weren't meant to realize this until now. Okay, all in divine timing. And we weren't meant to realize this until now because we weren't ready to heal it until now. And I also think that trauma in general, if this is a realization about, you know, our trauma and how our trauma has been affecting us, I think it's important to know that trauma doesn't know time. Like, trauma is like, time? I don't know her. Haven't heard of her. but it's true. I mean, and if you think about it, like, when we beat ourselves up and we say, oh my God, why can't I get over this? Or shouldn't I be over this by now? Shouldn't I? It's been years. Why do I still struggle with this or that? It's because trauma doesn't know time. Again, there's something about this moon that's really challenging our perception of time. That's why if you had a traumatic incident in your life or multiple traumas, and these don't have to be huge things. They don't have to be getting in a car crash or experiencing physical abuse. They can be little micro traumas that build up over time. You know, when we think of these traumas, it's kind of like it happened yesterday, right? We can really get to that pain and we can sort of cry about it or feel it as though we're experiencing it as though we're like 5 years old again. Again, that's because trauma does not know time. And I think that we're realizing we're in this full moon, we're getting a new perspective on, I think, the ways we've been operating around our trauma. And actually, it's kind of a really weird image that spirit's giving me, but hold, like, stay with me here. They're showing me like a Band-Aid on a wound, and then they're showing me like almost like people like dancing around this Band-Aid, or dancing around this wound almost. So like, how can we live around this Band-Aid? How can we ignore that this Band-Aid is there? Or how can we pretend like this Band-Aid is actually all the way healed and not just covering the wound in an unhealthy way? Or actually, is this Band-Aid that we've put over our trauma or put over our suffering, is it actually keeping us from actually healing it? Would it be more, I don't want to say efficient, but would it make more sense to actually take this Band-Aid off and have this wound kind of get some fresh air and heal that way? These are maybe, I hope this is making sense to you guys, because I'm really talking metaphorical here, but I'm also trying to channel from spirit. So we're really focusing on new perspective on these old wounds. And I think that's why, you know, my tarot cards, like I mentioned, the tarot cards that I pulled for this full moon are the Death card and the World. So I think we really are being invited into change. But, you know, in the Taurian way, Taurus does not want change. Scorpio loves change. So this full moon in Taurus, you know, we got the moon in Taurus, sun in Scorpio. I think actually the invitation, like I said, is change, not in a painful way. Change in a way that makes our lives easier, okay? And I do think that some of the words that I was kind of thinking were, you know, when we think about this road that we're taking to work, quote unquote, okay, let's keep going with this metaphor, we're maybe taking the hard road on something in our lives, and we're convinced that this is the only way to take, and maybe we're gonna get in something out of this now. Maybe we're getting to work and we actually enjoy now complaining about how much traffic there was. Oh man, it's backed up again, late again. You know, my my route to work is just so hard. Like, you know, you see how we buy into our own suffering. We really do. And when we buy into our own suffering, then we start kind of co-creating with our suffering. And then we just attract situations where that just reiterate the suffering we already believe that we have to be experiencing. So let me give you guys an example. And oh, that was the other thing. I wanted to ask you guys, you know, as part of the sermon for this Taurus full moon, I want to know, you know, think to yourself, like, is there any area in your life where you've been trying to prove a point that, you know, isn't necessarily a point that needs to be proved? Like, and maybe this point is something that relates to trauma. Let me elaborate on that. So let's say there's a part of our trauma that has told us, that has led us to believe that we are not worthy of love. Okay, we could spend our whole life actually believing that and buying into that and proving a point that we are not worthy of love. So then in our relationships, we're attracting partners that show us for some reason that we're not worthy of love. Or we act that way towards our romantic partners. That would be an example of how we're trying to, how we may be subconsciously proving a point that actually doesn't even make any sense. I'll give you guys a personal example too, and this was my realization. I've really been buying into the storyline of isolation, and that has been probably over the past my whole life, but definitely highlighted since 2018. And that tends to be, I think, my go-to coping mechanism for trauma is to just isolate. So I think because I've been buying into that suffering, buying into that, the point that I'm trying to make is that I must be alone. I must deal with my problems alone, or I can't ask for help, or nobody's going to understand me. Yes, I genuinely in my life have bought into those storylines. But then, you know, I bring that into my life, and then I'm subconsciously proving a point to myself at every turn that it's better for me to just be isolated. When really, is that true? No. It's not true. But again, when we try to punish people for our own wounds, or we try to prove our point from a place of wounding, that creates unnecessary suffering. So how much unnecessary suffering have I created for myself in the past 2 years because I've been trying to prove a point to myself that, again, I have to be alone. I have to isolate. It's safe. It's safest to isolate. And again, that's just an example. Maybe some of you will relate. So again, this full moon, there, it's highlighting what road are we taking that's actually hard. Is there an easier route? That's A. B. How have we been really, really investing and believing in our suffering? And is this actually the truth? Now, when I say that, I'm not discounting the way that you're suffering. I'm not saying that your suffering is not real. I'm not saying that your anxiety or your PTSD or your depression is not real or doesn't have a real reason to it, because it absolutely does. And I would never invalidate someone's suffering. But I will say that there is something about this moon, going back to that Taurus energy. Have we been stubborn around the way we are dealing with this suffering? Are we being stubborn about, oh, I'll never get over this. Oh, I'll never heal this. Oh, this is the only way that I can cope with this. It's not. Spirit is clearly saying it is not. With this full moon, it's sort of this road opener kind of energy. And that was another kind of Another phrase that came to me when I was meditating on this full moon, and actually there is, like, when I was reading, recently about voodoo and hoodoo, and there's, like, I think there's, like, an oil or just, like, a recipe. I think it's called Van Van oil, and it's supposed to be, like, a road opener. And again, I'm not necessarily suggesting that we all, like, go buy this type of oil or make this type of oil. I mean, if for some reason it's really resonating and you like making oil blends, like, sure, go ahead. But just, like, the metaphysical properties of a road opener substance, or, like, a road opener oil or a road opener candle or a road opener spell or whatever it may be. Again, not necessarily suggesting we do these things, but just kind of channeling that energy. Where can we open the road for ourselves? Is there some kind of ritual or meditation, or it could be a spell that we want to do around this time that will kind of show us a easier and more clear path to move forward on. And then going into, let's go back. So on 11/11, the sun conjunct Mercury. So that was the lead up to the full moon. So that sun conjunct Mercury, like I said, it's about new insights on old issues. That's our aha moment. That's our moment where we say, oh, wow, I've been taking the hard road on that one. Then on 11/12, we had the full moon, right? So that's when the sun opposes the moon. And then actually, let me double check this in my notes. But yeah, so then actually today, so I should say on 11/12, and then today on 11/13, we had Mars sextiling Jupiter. So I think that was our road opener. That was like, here's the new way. And today on 11/13, we also have Sun sextiling Pluto. So we have all this really supportive energy when it comes to actually making that change and actually seeing that change could be make our lives easier and fill our lives with less suffering. And the other thing that was coming to mind was that just the idea of happiness. And I think that I've often bought into the idea that, like, happiness is difficult or happiness is unattainable. And I think a lot of us probably have that wounding, just because, I don't know, like, I guess I'll talk from my experience, and maybe your experience too, from the sense, like, if you are American, and even from my perspective, like, I come from, you know, Italian immigrants who came to this world to kind of make a better life for their family. And I think there is, like, sometimes a wound surrounding, you know, if you come from an origin where your family immigrated to this country, I don't think the goal for those people was to be happy. You know, the goal for those people was to survive. And I think that still, even though now we're lucky enough, if you're a millennial or a Gen Z, I think we do have a privilege in the sense that now, because the generations before us, you know, they went through a lot of suffering, so we could kind of create these really out of the box lives, you know, aka me as, like, a podcaster and an astrologer and a psychic, you know, but we're still maybe stuck in that mentality of survival. Or we're still stuck in that mentality of life isn't really meant to be happy. Life is about kind of just suffering along and just trying to survive day by day. And that's not necessarily true. And I think when we're talking about happiness and our beliefs around happiness, that's also something we could be buying into. How many of us, you know, are trying to find happiness outside of ourselves. That's something that I'm very guilty of. Even when I was in New York City, I feel like I'm constantly, maybe this is my son in my ninth house, I'm constantly looking for the place that will provide me with happiness and joy. And is there a place in this world where I could move to and I wouldn't have to experience anxiety or depression or suffering? But, you know, that's just the illusion, right? When it comes down to it, even if I'm in my favorite city in the world, like let's say Hong Kong or something like that, I've still experienced those low emotions in my favorite city. So what makes me think that there's a city out there that can provide me with like this eternal happiness? Same thing with people, right? We try to seek happiness in other people when really happiness is on the inside. I do struggle with that though. I will say, like, you know, lately I've really been meditating, like, how the hell do you cultivate internal happiness? And maybe that's kind of sad. And it's not to say like I've never been happy before, but I think that was my aha moment too, in the sense that I think there's a part of me that kind of believes that, like, for some reason, unhappiness is just part of my experience, or like discontentment is part of my human experience, where happiness is a very like challenging, like borderline unattainable thing, which can't be true, right? It can't be true. This has to all be sourcing from some kind of societal conditioning or past life stuff, which we'll talk about a lot about past life stuff in this lesson. Or in this episode, I should say. But recently, I've kind of had an aha moment. And this comes with the Artist's Way stuff, too, that we've been doing on this podcast, the Artist's Way series. I think happiness comes from creation. I think we find internal happiness when we create the things that we love. But what are we most resistant to doing? It's freaking creating our lives. We're very resistant to taking the reins on our own life and steering our way out of the mud. We're very resistant to, you know, writing, to making art, to, well, some of us are, aka I'm talking to myself right now. Sometimes even we're resistant to making our own podcast. I think when we create, that really is how we cultivate that sense of happiness. And I've been reading a lot of like Buddhist la-la lately, and one of the things, I forget the book, I forget the author, but someone, like this monk, this Buddhist monk said, happiness is freedom. And how do we achieve freedom? Well, that goes back to the thing I was talking about in the airport earlier. You know, I created kind of freedom in that moment because I radically accepted that my flight may get canceled. And then I freed myself from suffering in that moment. And I freed myself of suffering for the next 5 hours or whatever time I was sitting there. I could have sat there in crippling anxiety saying, oh my God, what if my flight gets canceled? Instead, I just accepted, okay, it may happen. Focus on the breath. And actually, there's a lot of freedom in focusing on changing our thought patterns and focusing on changing the way we breathe. And again, I used to think that was all bullshit. But now I think this something about this full moon is kind of saying, take responsibility for your bullshit. and take responsibility to some degree for your suffering. And that's actually how we achieve a happier and easier life, okay? That's the other thing. I think we've bought into certain things having to be hard when really there's an easier path. So a couple more things before we get into the Q&A. I will say that you guys are so on the same frequency as I am. Like, it's not even funny. Because the other thing that I was kind of downloading about this full moon, looking at the astrology surrounding it, I really felt like, wow, like, this is an opportunity to really, I think, quite frankly, it goes as deep as healing a past life wound. It goes as deep as having a realization that we have never had before in our soul's existence. Like, maybe in my entire soul's existence, I've never, until this moment in time, I've never had the thought that I need to take responsibility for my own happiness. You know, isn't that powerful? Like, imagine how many lives that I've lived where I have never been evolved enough to even have this thought about my own suffering. And not to say that I'm like so evolved in this lifetime, but now in this lifetime, I have this gift where I'm 24 years old. And I'm realizing this now. That's really interesting. And do ponder that this moon may be healing things that are not only from this lifetime, but past lifetimes too. And think of how powerful that is. And I'm always trying to get people pumped. I want to get you guys pumped to heal those past life wounds, because that's how we evolve, and that's how we move forward. And for me, I'm like, why waste another life making those mistakes again? And when we buy into our suffering, when we buy into our own unhappiness, when we take the hard road, when we keep taking the hard road, that's actually us repeating shit that we already did. We already passed that stuff. You're telling me that you want to spend another lifetime doing that same shit, and you're just going to waste this lifetime and then have to reincarnate back here again? Like, no. Like, for me, I'm like, let's get it all out of the way, because after this lifetime, like, I want to be out of here. Like, like, maybe that's not the right attitude, but I'm like, you know what? If I could, when I die, become like a guardian angel and not have to come back down to earth again, that'd be great. But in order to do that, we really have to have these realizations about our own responsibility for ourselves. But going back to what I said about us being on the same frequency, when I was stuck in the airport, I posted on Instagram that the next podcast would be kind of a Q&A, and so many of you guys asked me about past life stuff, and I thought that was so interesting, because I was thinking that this moon did have a lot to do with past life healing. And just in seeing your questions about past lives, that was super, super, super interesting and validating that we kind of all are in the same frequency. And I like to think that we are all here meeting each other for a reason. Even though we're not sitting in person, and you're not necessarily like sitting next to me or someone else who's listening, I like to think that we're all together, meant to be learning this lesson together, and that's powerful. Now, before I get to the Q&A, because later in the episode, I will be talking about past lives, there is one question right now that I want to answer that I think really relates to this full moon. And someone asked me to tell them more about the North Node and the South Node. So really, what is the North Node and the South Node? It is the North Node and South Node. They're not planets. They're not asteroids. They're really just points in the sky. They're not a physical object. And really, what the North Node and South Node, they're part of the moon's path. So when the moon is sort of orbiting around Earth, the moon's path. Crosses with the sun's path. And there are two points, North and South Node, where those paths sort of intersect in the ecliptic. Now, do you really need to know that if you're not a student of astrology? No, but if you are a student of astrology, you may want to know that, yeah, what really is the North Node and South Node? Well, they're parts of the path of the moon's rotation. And why am I really talking about this? Well, regardless of your North Node and South Node, what sign they're in, where they are in your chart, I think this moon is kind of telling us, like, and this is just my intuition, take a look at your South Node during this moon, or whenever you happen to be listening to this. Do a little investigation on your South Node. Now, my South Node does happen to be in Taurus, but it doesn't, for all intents and purposes, it doesn't matter in this message that I'm giving you. It doesn't matter. Take a look at your South Node, and what really is the South Node? What's the difference between the South Node and the North Node? So the South Node is sort of the energy, the compilation of all the lives that you've lived before. It's sort of like a test that you've already taken and that you've already passed. And I will say that regardless if you even maybe you're listening to this, you're like, Mal, like, I literally have no idea where my South Node is. Regardless of that, you know your South Node, because you are your South Node. Sometimes we know the energy of our South Node even more than our Sun. Because our South Node, again, those are past life lessons that we've already learned. South Node is the energy from our chart that we're very comfortable with. And in one of the very first episodes of Horoscope Witch, I described the South Node. It kind of feels like a snuggie. You're wrapped in a snuggie by a warm fire. And the North Node is, imagine how comfortable that must be, you know, to be wrapped in your South Node in a snuggie in front of a warm fire. If that's the South Node, the North Node is if someone pushed you outside in a blizzard in a bikini. That is how uncomfortable the North Node is for all of us. But the North Node is really about, how did I want to put this? The North Node is about new material, right? This is a new subject that we've signed up to learn, not only in this life, but also future lives too. So we may not completely get it right in this life, but we can try. And anything about the North Node is probably scary to us. So the energy of our North Node, whether it's in Gemini or whether it's in the fourth house, do look at both. Some people say that the house of the North and South Node is actually more important than the sign. I'm not sure what I think about that. I think they're probably equally important. I actually think also your aspects to your North and South Node are definitely very important too. So do pay attention if you have really tight aspects to your North and South Node. That's definitely like, oh, we got some karma there. So North Node is really what we're trying to step into. South Node is what we're trying to shed. Now, South Node, it can be hard because, again, who wants to leave a snuggie in front of a fire and go out in a blizzard in a bikini? But for this full moon, ponder what area of your life is very comfortable. What area in your life are you avoiding challenge? And now Spirit showing me the Strength card. So where right now are you needing to overcome a fear? And it could be a very simple fear. It doesn't have to be something like confront my parents or I don't know. It could be something like I have a fear of dancing, or I have a fear of being in my body, or I have a fear of traveling. I have a fear of being alone. I have a fear of moving away from home. All of these things are related to our South Node and our North Node. And typically, I think our biggest fears in this lifetime, whatever they may be for you, that's seriously pointing you to your North Node. like if you're scared of something, it probably has something to do with your North Node. So I think a lot of the people that are listening to this right now are probably my age and perhaps have their South Node in Taurus, North Node in Scorpio. So really, in a nutshell, for me, it's sort of that South Node in Taurus is like my way, the hard way. You know, being so convinced that I'm doing something the right way when really there is clearly an easier path to go about it. And North Node in Scorpio is about taking risks. It's about, you know, for me on a personal level, it's kind of about like liberation. It's about getting outside of my comfort zone. It's about taking risks. Again, it's about doing things in this lifetime that are not by the book, if that makes sense. So long story short, guys, this full moon, regardless of what sign it is, look at your South Node. If your South Node is, and also there are some like birth chart generators that will only give you the North Node, but know that the South Node is directly 180 opposite from your North Node. So let's say if your North Node is in Cancer, what's the sign opposite of Cancer? Capricorn. So your South Node would be in Capricorn. If your North Node is in Aries, South Node would be Libra. North Node Pisces, South Node Virgo, and so on and so forth. So it's just the opposite sign. So take a look at your South Node. Really consider, like, my South Node's in Virgo. How am I very comfortable being Virgoian, even if I'm a Libra, but my South Node is in Virgo? Like, think about how we're comfortable in that South Node archetype, but then we look at the North Node and we say, oh gosh, Scorpio energy scares the shit out of me. Libra energy, needing to rely on someone else, scares the shit out of me. Aries energy, needing to be independent, that scares the shit out of me. You know, that's actually what we're being called, I think, to look at with this Taurus full moon. So that's just my take. I hope you guys got something out of this sermon. And I'm going to take a quick break, and then we'll get into the question and answer part of this podcast. So be right back. And we're back. Before we get to the Q&A, just to briefly interrupt our regular programming, a couple of announcements. So I know the Artist Way series, it is still going, I promise. I know I've lied to you a couple times, telling you that the Artist Way part two of the series is coming, but it actually is legitimately coming. So don't think I've given up on that, because it's definitely still going. It's just been hard because I was in New York City. And October, guys, October for psychics is like Christmas for Santa Claus. Like, my goodness, I was so busy in October, which I'm so grateful for. And quite quickly, I like basically manifested a like waiting list for astrology readings. So that was like amazing. And thank you so much if you've been waiting patiently for your astrology reading with me, whether you're in person or whether you are a online client. Thank you so much for your support. And thank you for understanding that readings happen divine timing, and they're not always going to happen on our human conception of time, and they always happen in the exact right moment. So that being said, currently on Etsy, I have, I think, 5 natal chart readings for sale, and those 5 I will be doing between now and between the end of the year. So really there are only like 5 spots left for like a Skype astrology reading with me before the end of 2019. Of course, there'll be more in 2020, so there's no rush. But if you do want a natal chart reading with me before the end of the year, I'm definitely open to that. And in a natal chart reading with me, I thought I'd just Can I just take like 2 seconds, guys? You can fast forward, but let me just take 2 seconds to describe a natal chart reading and what it's like with me, because I don't think we do this enough. And natal chart readings are different depending on who you go to. So with me, in a natal chart reading, I focus heavily on your aspects. So yes, we will talk about your sun in Virgo or your Venus in Scorpio, but the most important part of a reading is how the planets are interacting with each other. And that is really what we're going to be covering. So if you have had trouble putting together like what your sun square Jupiter means, or what your moon trining Neptune means, or what your stellium in the 12th house means, that is really what we're focusing on in this natal chart. But speaking of past lives, because we'll be talking about this soon, we will cover some things about your past life karma, and we'll cover a lot about your challenges and your strengths in this lifetime. And it can be a really, really cool tool to use when we're considering our life purpose, what we're good at, what we're being challenged with, and that really all comes from the aspects. So I think some people do have it's not necessarily a false idea of what an astrology reading is, but I do think that there are some people and some baby astrologers out there who are giving astrology readings that are kind of like just about your placements and not necessarily the aspects. Now, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that, and you could certainly be looking for that kind of information. But for me, my astrology readings are very much a traditional astrology reading. So we will definitely be talking about the aspects and your psyche. And if you don't know me or my qualifications, one of my goals for 2020 is to be a certified astrologer, either through ESAR or NCGR, or maybe even the AFA, American Federation for Astrology. So I am working on that. You don't need to be a certified astrologer in order to give astrology readings. But I just thought I'd put that out there to tell you guys, as a practitioner, it is my goal to be that, because I think it maybe is important. And the other thing is that what are my qualifications? I've been studying astrology individually for several years. I would say specifically in the last 2 to 3 years, astrology really has pretty much been like a part of my everyday life. And in the past year, I've gone through multiple hours of courses with a professional astrologer located in the Chicagoland area, and I've learned a lot from him. And it was really after I kind of solidified some of my knowings with my astrology teacher that I finally went professional. And this year I've been so blessed. I didn't know that I would be blessed with doing as many astrology readings as I have this year. And it's just been so awesome to work with you guys. And I think that in the upcoming series with Horoscope Witch, there's going to be a series that's focusing in on specifically birth chart interpretation, but I'm going to leave that as a mystery. But be excited, because this new series that's coming to this podcast is going to be super, super cool. So yep, those are my announcements. Artist Way Part 2 is coming, I promise. So if you aren't on that bandwagon, get on that bandwagon, because this Artist Way book is so good and it's so eye-opening. And then announcement number 2, currently on the Etsy shop, there are 5 natal chart readings. And if you buy a natal chart reading now, we can definitely get that cooking before the end of the year. So you kind of have some things to focus on. And also, sorry, one more thing, a natal chart reading with me also includes transits. So some really important transits that are coming up for you in 2020. So we'll also talk about what 2020 has in store for you. And my one other astrological offering on Etsy is a transit reading. So if you're not necessarily interested in the natal chart reading at this moment, but you're interested in your transits coming up in 2020, there's also that option. Now, a transits report is written, whereas a natal chart reading with me is over video chat. So you'll actually get to like talk to me in real time, whereas a transits report is just written. So thank you so much for letting me plug myself. Love you guys. And let's get into the questions. So someone asked about the past lives and the impact on our present life natal chart and also our physical body. Thank you for such an interesting question. So there is a sector, is that the right word? There's a sect of astrology called karmic astrology. And I definitely believe that, you know, what is a natal chart? A natal chart is literally a compilation of all of our karma. And how do we accumulate karma? Well, we live many lives. And a lot of our karma, it's not only from this lifetime, it's from past lives. So yes, astrology has a lot to do with past lives. I've yet to meet an astrologer who does not believe in reincarnation or past lives. In fact, I don't really understand how you can be an astrologer or study astrology and not also consider past lives. But I mean, I'm sure it's possible, and I'm not saying believing in past lives is a requirement to, you know, I don't know, being interested in astrology, but the more you study astrology and get into astrology, it just becomes very apparent that past lives are a thing. So past lives in the natal chart, there is varying answers to this. Every astrologer has their own theory of how past lives show up in the birth chart. Really, one of my favorite books, I'll put this in the show notes. If you're looking specifically, if you're a student of astrology and you're looking specifically for a book about astrology and its relation to past lives and reincarnation, I would recommend Astrology and Past Lives by Mary Devlin. So in that book, she talks a lot about karmic astrology, and according to her, our sun, our rising, and our personal planets are sort of what our current soul, like our current lifetime, is here to achieve and experience. But then the outer planets, like Uranus, Neptune, and Pluto, those are more about collective karma. So some karmic astrologers, or in some past life astrology studies, they'll actually say stuff like, okay, like we may travel as a generation, according to our outer planets, if that makes sense. So let's say, everybody with Uranus in Capricorn, maybe we all lived together during the Roman Empire, and we all, you know, died in this way, and now we've all reincarnated in 2019 with Uranus in Capricorn, and we're all going to be collectively working through the karma that we all built up in the Roman Empire. Now, I'm not saying that is true at all. That's just me making that up. But some astrologers will say things like that. So I guess spark notes that our personal planets, like the sun, moon, Venus, etc., those are about our personal karma and our personal lessons, whereas the outer planets, Uranus, Neptune, Pluto, those are more collective karma. Now, and this is just according to Mary Devlin. So then, according to Mary Devlin as well, the 12th house in our birth charts also is a very karmic place, which I do have to agree with her, you know, because the 12th house, it can be about our subconscious, but it also can be about what was immediately preceding our current life. So, for instance, let's say in a past life, let's say there you committed suicide in a past life. And now in this life, we may be able to see that phenomenon in the birth chart, specifically in the 12th house. Also, the 12th house is said to sometimes give some idea to what was happening while we were in the womb. So I don't know if some kind of, if something traumatic happened to your mother or, I don't know, something like that may have happened, that can also show up in the 12th house. And according to Mary Devlin, the 12th house, she calls it the house of unfinished business. So regardless of what happens, before your current lifetime, if you do have some sort of unfinished business, it may show up in the 12th house. Again, none of this is God's word. And even though Mary Devlin is very knowledgeable about karma and past lives, like, again, every single astrologer has their own take on past lives and karma in the birth chart. So I'm just kind of giving you guys a little bit of an overview. Saturn in karmic astrology, it just may represent our past life characteristics. And Jupiter may represent sort of rewards for good deeds we did in a past life. And then, of course, we already talked about the lunar nodes, the North Node and the South Node. The North Node being our soul's mission, and our South Node being sort of the collective past energy of multiple lives we've lived in the past, and that being very comfortable, a very comfortable place to live in, whereas we should be moving towards more of our embracing our North Node energy and getting outside of our comfort zone, because that's ultimately the closer we can get to our North Node energy, the more we can evolve our soul to the next level. At least that's my take on it. Also, it's when studying karmic astrology or past life astrology, it's kind of a common belief that for some reason, like, your incarnations go in order of the zodiac. So, like, for instance, your first life you were an Aries, your second life you were a Taurus, third life you were a Gemini, so on and so forth until you get to Pisces, which would be like one of your last lives. I don't believe that at all. I seriously think that's so untrue. But if you, you're welcome to believe it. I'm just here to give you the information and you do what you will with the information. But I just don't buy into that. What I do buy into is that I think if you have heavy energy, like heavy Pisces energy, heavy Capricorn energy, or heavy Aquarius energy, because those are the last three zodiac signs, I think you may be an older soul. Whereas if you have heavy Aries, Taurus, or Gemini energy, which is like the first three signs, you may be a little bit of a newer soul. Now, just because you have an Aries sun does not necessarily mean you are a younger soul. And just because you have an Aries sun doesn't necessarily mean you have heavy Aries energy. What do I mean by having heavy energy? It means you have multiple things that relate back to a sign. So I can confidently say that I have heavy Pisces energy, because my moon and my sun and my Saturn are in Pisces. Also, my ruling planet is Jupiter, which is a co-ruler of Pisces. And then there's a ton of other shit that relates back to the Pisces archetype in my chart. So I, not to be like, oh, I'm an old soul, but I can confidently say that, like, I've lived many lives, and I've also had that revealed to me in meditation too. So that's something that you may find when you're studying astrology and past lives, but take it with a grain of salt. Also, other astrologers will say that Things like the moon is your past ascendant, the ascendant is your past sun, and the sun is your future ascendant. Again, something that I don't necessarily believe, although there are astrologers that I deeply respect that do refer to this. So for instance, if you listen to the Radiance Project with Heidi Rose Robbins, that's really one of my favorite astrological podcasts. She buys into this idea. She says multiple times on that podcast that our ascendant is sort of like what we're kind of growing into, and our moon is more about our past and our sun is about our future. So I guess on an esoteric level I can buy into it, but on a literal level, like, I don't buy into it. Like, I just don't. Okay. But on a greater scale, like I said, the birth chart represents karma. And when our soul is on the other side waiting to reincarnate to Earth, or waiting to carnate to Earth, our soul decides, you know, what is the configurations of our chart. Our soul decides what sign we're going to be. Our soul decides, like, based on the aspects in our chart, what we will experience. So I think the birth chart has direct connections to our soul contract, if you will. Now, that's just an overview. Sorry, this is a really long answer to your question, but as you can tell, there's so much information about past life in the birth chart. For me, if you want to know my opinion and what I do in a birth chart reading when it comes to past life, and if we're talking about past life stuff, when it comes to your birth chart, for me, I'm mainly looking at the North Node and South Node. But also, I think Chiron is a very important aspect that's overlooked. I think Chiron is not only about our wounds from this life, but I think it could very well be wounds from a past life, especially depending on how it's aspected. And also, retrograde planets in your chart. You probably have at least one planet in retrograde. And I also think when we're born with retrograde planets in our chart, that's an indication of unfinished business from a past life. That's an indication that we did not learn this lesson in this lifetime, or in last lifetime, and now we're here to learn it in this lifetime. I will give you a very amazing example. And this was the first professional birth chart reading I ever did. And I'm going to be really vague about, like, who it was. But this person, they were born during a Mercury retrograde. So I'm thinking they have past life karma surrounding using their voice. And the person, I asked them about this, and they confirmed, yes, this was a challenge they faced in this lifetime. But I noticed in their progressed chart, although in their natal chart, Mercury will be retrograde forever, in their progressions, Mercury went direct around the time I think they were like 21 years old. And I asked what was going on during that time, about 21 years old, and the person said that they got a divorce. They got married really young. They got a divorce from an abusive person who was keeping them from using their voice. And then they literally went on, I won't say the TV show, but they literally went on like a singing competition TV show to like sing and use their voice. Like, doesn't that give you chills? Like, and it just was the most beautiful example of a thing where in a past lifetime with that Mercury retrograde, they weren't allowed to use their voice in some way. But then in this lifetime, they had the opportunity to overcome that retrograde and really use their voice to their advantage. And then the rest of the reading, I was like, oh, it was so awesome. Like, I was seeing all this stuff about this person, like, making albums and singing and getting back in the recording studio. And I'm like, this is exactly what this person was meant to do. So that was really fun. And that's just an example of how important your retrogrades are in your chart, especially if they're personal planets. I would say it's more common to have like Uranus, Neptune, Pluto in retrograde, just because those planets are retrograde like half the year anyways. Especially if you have, Mercury or Venus or Mars, like those are really big karmic things that you're here to figure out. That's what I do in readings. Like those are the things that I'm focusing in on. Now going back to your question, you also asked the impact of past lives on the physical body. Very intriguing question. Let's speculate. And before I say anything on this, just so you know, like, I'm not speaking from universal truth. I'm not trying to offend anybody. I'm just speculating. But I know that the physical body and health can be an especially sensitive topic for a lot of us. And as we can see with even something like vaccinations, like, doesn't matter if you're pro or con vaccinations, it creates a very, very heated, heated conflicts within people just because it's relating to one's health. So, and it tends to, in the spiritual community, this is something that's debated too. How much of our karma is related to our health, or how much are the mind and the body really connected? No matter what, you'll probably, you know, some people disagree with me, some people will agree, and that's okay. And again, I'm not saying I'm 100% right. But I definitely, for speculating, I definitely think past lives can have a impact on our physical body in some way. Like I said earlier in this episode, trauma does not know time. So for instance, I was trying to think of an example. And again, I'm just picking like the touchiest subject here, and I know a lot of people are sensitive about this, but let's take someone in this lifetime, a woman or someone who identifies as a woman who is unable to achieve orgasm. And let's say that in this lifetime, she is unable to achieve orgasm, but there has been no, in this lifetime, there hasn't been really any, explicit, trauma surrounding, her genital area. Like, let's say like there hasn't been like sexual assault, there hasn't been, abuse really, but for some reason, like for she, something that really is gets her down is the fact that she can't achieve orgasm. I would say that could be a past life thing. That could be a past life agreement around a vow of chastity. That could be history of sexual assault in a past life. I think especially something like sexual assault, I think we carry from life to life to life. And because it is such an abomination of our soul and of our energy, I think something like that we could definitely carry throughout multiple lifetimes. But that's not the only thing, you know, the effect on the physical body. Again, let's speculate. I'm just speculating here. If you came into this world as a child with chronic illness, you were born into this world with, the minute you came into this planet, you were diagnosed with something, or you've had a chronic illness since you were young. Many astrologers will say that that is like a past life situation, or it's part of the soul contract. And chronic illness in general, even if it developed earlier in life, I think many astrologers do also speculate that this could be something, again, a past life wound. Again, I don't mean to offend anybody because I know how devastating it must be to have a chronic illness and to struggle with a chronic illness. So I don't mean to be writing it off at all in like a simplistic way. Like, oh, it's just a past life thing, you know, come in for an astrology reading with me, we'll get you fixed right up. Like, no, that's not what I'm saying at all. So please don't misinterpret me saying that. But in at the end of the day, it is interesting to speculate, right? Like, it is interesting to think, like, okay, I have a chronic illness. You know, what's going on in my birth chart in relation to this? What was going on in a past life? And I think regardless, what I can say that I truly, truly do believe is that regardless of if it's a common cold or if it's cancer, I think every single physical ailment has an aspect, a physical aspect, a mental aspect, and a spiritual aspect. And there's no exceptions to that. So I can boldly say that I believe that. So it doesn't matter if it's something like a common cold, it not only has a physical aspect, it has a spiritual and a mental aspect as well. And I believe that for anything as serious as cancer as well. So that's why I think it's important that, you know, we are so thankful that we have, you know, modern and westernized medicine. But I think in general, it's also important for people to be working with other types of practitioners too. You know, not just a doctor. The doctor can focus on the physical, but also maybe therapist for the mental and healer for the spiritual. Healing has to happen on multiple levels. Of course, I'm going to say that though, because I'm a healer. Okay, so that's enough with that past life stuff. But long story short, of course, I believe in past lives. And I think it's interesting to speculate how, you know, past lives can affect our physical body. Oh, one more thing. Classic example. Someone who struggles with weight or obesity in this lifetime, that could very, very well be past life stuff. Like, imagine, you know, in a person who struggles with weight, having a past life regression and discovering that in a past life they died of starvation. You know, like, wouldn't that be so powerful to realize that and to be able to heal that wound in this lifetime? And also another question you guys asked me about past life regression. Now, I have mixed feelings. I have had a past life regression before, and also I've been able to kind of achieve a past life regression in a way in my own meditations, and it's been interesting. Now, I think where we can go wrong is having a past life regression just purely motivated out of curiosity. So if you're like, just like, oh, I want to go like have a past life regression. Like, I want to know if I was Queen Elizabeth II, or like, I want to know if I was like George Washington. First of all, a past life regression probably is not going to tell you that. Also, an astrologer can't tell who you were in a past life from your birth chart. We could probably tell like your wounds, but we're not going to be able to pinpoint like, oh, you were Oscar Wilde or you were Virginia Woolf in a past life. Like, that just doesn't happen. And I think it's like, getting a past life regression just purely out of curiosity is just never a good idea. You have to trust that, you know, if you're not meant to remember something, you're not meant to remember it. And why would you need to know your past life stuff if you've already sort of worked through the issues and the problems from that past life? Then there's literally no reason why you would need to have a past life regression, you know. But I would say I would recommend hypnosis or past life regression to people who are struggling with things that they just can't get past. It could be addictions. It could be, I would say addictions are a big thing that I think are from past lives a lot of the times, or getting, not getting over trauma, but getting a new perspective on trauma. I think past life regression is really interesting for that. My past life regression, I think it did help me in some way, but it didn't like change my life. And I just think that it's probably more effective to just focus in on this life. We're here to be us. We're not here to be a past version of ourselves, you know? So that's why I feel like past life regression, sometimes it's not a necessary healing for all of us. For some of us, it can be very healing, but it's not necessary. Also, from what I understand from hypnosis as well, or we should just call it regression, I've noticed that you can't really control the subconscious mind. So if you find a practitioner that you really trust and you want to be regressed or go into hypnosis, you can't really control it. So you could very well, like, your subconscious mind might want to take you instead to like a childhood memory. And actually, maybe a childhood memory from this lifetime could be profoundly more healing for you than discovering a piece of past life information that you don't necessarily even need to know. So I tend to, although I think past lives are very important, I don't think, you know, I think people have the wrong understanding or wrong motivation surrounding, that. I also feel that way about like Akashic Records readings. Again, I'm not throwing shade to people who do Akashic Records readings. And I'm not opposed to getting one. Like I maybe one day I will get one and see what it's all about. But from what I understand, like someone opening the Akashic Records, again, it has to be for a purpose, because what's the point of knowing all this information about your past lives that like doesn't serve you in this life? In order for past life regression to be serving you, there has to be like a purpose. Okay, that's enough of that. Okay, Mal, stop talking. So kind of switching gears here, someone asked what I thought about repeating cards. So this is a tarot question. So yeah, I think some people call them stalker cards. I think recently I listened to a Tarot for the Wild Soul Lindsay Mack episode about how we should not use the word stalker cards and we should really switch to repeating cards, just because people have literal stalkers, and that's not a great thing to, you know, talk about. And also, I think I agree with Lindsay, even more so in the sense that tarot is not scary. And you guys have heard me say this all the time. Tarot is not scary. Tarot is not spooky. Tarot is not Halloween town. Okay. So when we use the term like stalker card, I think that perpetuates, kind of the notion that tarot is scary, and it doesn't need to be like that. So when we get a repeating card, from my perspective, it could be something like that we're not listening to. Like for instance, like let's say you're trying to go, 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 do, 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 manifest, 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 and you keep pulling like the Seven of Pentacles. Like your spirit guides are clearly telling you like slow down, and like maybe now is not the time to act. It's the time to rest, but you keep pushing forward. That could be a repeating card. It's maybe a message that you're not completely getting. But I don't think that's always the case. I think sometimes, especially with the major arcana cards, I think it takes a while to work through the energy. So I think most likely our repeating card probably is a major arcana card, because those are huge spiritual energies. And we can't just move through a major arcana card in one day. Like for instance, like this full moon, you know, I pulled the death card. I can't just be like, okay, Tuesday, death card, done. What's next? Like, no, like a major arcana card, if you're going through a major arcana card, it could take months, even a year, to work through one major arcana card. So I think that really is the source of the repeating cards, is when it comes down to it, tarot is life. And we, in life, we go through certain themes and certain cycles for a while, right? Because it takes a while to learn those lessons. So that is really the source of repeating cards, I think. It's really just the universe telling you, this is the cycle that you're in. how much can I really get out of this card? How much can I really learn from this card? And I tend to see repeating cards as more of a gift than a curse, because how special is it that you get to spend some extra time with a card to really, really know the card? And really, truly, that's the only way we really learn tarot. I mean, you can listen to me or anybody else talk about tarot until you're blue in the face, but at the end of the day, you have to experience and walk through the card to really know it. Like recently, a repeating card of mine has been the Three of Swords. And although that doesn't sound like a fun card to have repeating all the time, it's actually been so healing, and it's been such a gift for that to be a repeating card for me, and for me to really realize the power of the Three of Swords card. I've been able to really develop my own definition of the Three of Swords and really move past that whole heartbreak thing. And now I don't really see it that way anymore. I really see it as like a releasing of an old wound, a releasing of pulling out a thorn that we've been using to protect ourselves. And it's really been a card of vulnerability for me. So it's really been a beautiful experience. So pay attention to those repeating cards. I think they're definitely important. They are not a coincidence. There are no such things as a coincidence in the tarot. So again, if something like flies out, I think cards that fly out of the deck are really important as well. So another question, do I believe in cusps? I believe I've answered this question before, so I'll do a short answer. But no, I don't believe in cusps. And I know this is a very touchy subject because some people are very attached to being like, oh, I'm a Cancer on the Leo cusp, or whatever it may be. No, I don't. I don't believe in cusps because I think that again, like we talked about before, it was not an accident that you reincarnated here as a Leo or as a Virgo. And even if you are a 29 degree Virgo right on the cusp of Leo, or even if you are a 1 degree Pisces right on the cusp of Aquarius, that was not a mistake. Do you actually think that your soul made a mistake and that your soul should have came here as an Aquarius, but you know, you were, God was late in putting you down to earth, and man, you were supposed to be an Aquarius, but it was late, so now you're a Pisces. Damn. How does that make sense? Like, I don't think that makes sense. There's no such thing as a cusp. I'll just say that very strongly. Again, you're welcome to disagree with me. You really are. Again, I don't take it personally. And you don't have to agree with me about every single thing about astrology. But I think when you write yourself off as a cusp, you may be missing the lesson of that sign. And I've talked about this before on other episodes, but sometimes I think people say like, oh, I'm a Scorpio, but I'm on the Sagittarius cusp, and I'm really more relate to being a Sagittarius. For me, I view that as direct avoidance. There's something about being a Scorpio that they don't want to admit or they don't want to deal with. And there's something about the energy that they're rejecting. So they're just sort of like, oh, but yeah, I mean, I'm a Scorpio, but like, I'm really a Sagittarius. Like, no. No, you're not. You're a Scorpio. And if you really do feel like a Sagittarius, I could probably find where it is in your chart that you have Sagittarius, but it's probably not what you think it is, if that makes sense. So, yeah, I don't believe in cusps. End of story. So my take on numerology, that was another question. Thank you for that question. I think numerology is really important, especially when it comes to the tarot. I think it's very, it definitely is important when learning the tarot, and I find it specifically helpful to know a little bit about numerology when it comes to learning the minor arcanas. I think personally it's really hard to learn the minor arcanas within the suits. So to go like, let's say you're looking at the swords, to go Ace of Swords to the Ten of Swords and try to learn it like 1 through 10, I think that's really hard. I actually think it's easier and more efficient and makes more sense to sort of learn the major arcana by number. So if you take all of the aces and put them side by side, and all of the threes and all of the fours and all of the sixes and so on and so forth, I think it gives you a little bit better of a picture of the cards. And for instance, like, I think when we do it that way, like, let's say we take all four threes in the major arcana. So we have the Three of Swords, Three of Wands, Three of Cups, Three of Pentacles. We put them side by side. So they're all kind of like a cookie, only one is chocolate chip, one is sugar, one is snickerdoodle, and one is M&M or whatever it may be. What am I even talking about, guys? Long story short, I do think numerology is helpful, because then if we know, okay, I've got the threes in the tarot, I know threes represents rebalancing, it represents group dynamics, it represents turning points or whatever it may be, then we can kind of see all the threes in the tarot in a new way, and we can synthesize them better. Now, numerology in general, like the significance of numbers, for sure, I think numerology is really ancient metaphysics. Like, even if we think of Pythagoras, Pythagoras was really into the metaphysics behind numbers, and he really believed in like the spirituality of what each number meant. And even in things like the Kabbalah or even the Bible, or numbers are very important. And I think it does help me to know my life path number. So there's ways, I mean, you can just Google how to calculate your life path number. So for me, I'm a life path number 9, and that's always really resonated with me and does relate to my astrology. Now, here's what I'll say where I think numerology gets really fluffy is like this whole like angel number phenomenon. Now, I'm not saying that it's not legitimate, but like the amount of people who wonder like, oh, I keep seeing 111 or 222 or 333 or 444 or 555, 666, whatever it may be. What does it mean? I keep seeing 222. What does it mean? I swear I'm not making fun of you. It seems like it's just not that important. Like, I don't know. And maybe it's important to you. Like, I'm not discounting your experience. And like, I do see repeating numbers, and I have numbers that mean something to me. But for me, they don't necessarily relate back to the meaning of numerology. I think repeating numbers is just our guides kind of saying hi, to be honest. Like, they're kind of like, hey, you're on the right path. Or hey, I've got your back, or hey, I'm here with you. Hey, I love you. Those I think are repeating numbers. I don't necessarily think like just because you're seeing repeating 666, like the demons are following you or anything like that. So yeah, I think that's something that's kind of like overhyped. I think when it comes to looking for signs, I think numbers can be important, but also I think it's not necessarily like the repeating numbers, but sometimes if you have like a significance to a number, like for me, it's like 22 or 33, 23 or 32 are like my big, like my spiritual numbers. Like if I'm seeing those numbers a lot, like I know I'm on the right track. You know, formulate your own kind of number system, formulate the numbers that you like. And I think that can work too for receiving signs. But when it comes down to it, I think our guides are desperate to talk to us, guys. You don't realize. And we miss like 80% of the signs that our ancestors and guides are giving us. So I think numbers are just the most obvious sign that we may notice. But when it comes down to it, I mean, signs can come in all forms. Animals, I've heard some people are drawn to feathers. Some people see like rainbows as signs. Some people see pennies or coins or whatever it may be. I think the more unique sign that you have agreed with your guides, the better, because then it just becomes so obvious that they're trying to communicate with you. Like, I'll give you guys like a really personal example, and part of me is like, should I even share this? Because I feel like my signs with me and my guides, it's like a very intimate thing. But I will say that I always felt like finding pennies on the ground was like definitely a sign from spirit. And there was a time when I was in high school where I would just find like an unbelievable amount of pennies like everywhere. And it was like leading me on the right track. But as I grew older, that sign of the pennies, it actually developed into something like that is Abraham Lincoln. So when I see anything Abraham Lincoln, I know my guides are trying to communicate with me. And this gets like to a ridiculous jaw-dropping level where like I will see Abraham Lincoln in places that you would literally never expect to see him. Or if anybody's talking about him, I'm like, oh my God, it's a sign. Or like I will like just run into like in New York City, like I just ran into a statue of Abraham Lincoln out of nowhere. Like I turned a corner and he was just like there. Or even when I now this is the craziest thing. When I landed in Malaysia, why the hell would Abraham Lincoln ever be in Malaysia? When I landed in Malaysia, I was scared out of my mind. I was going to be there for a year. Me and my teaching cohort were all in this bus where we just finished like 24 hours of travel. We're all exhausted. We're all dehydrated. We're all like, you know, what did we do? We're here for a year. Oh my God, it's so hot. We're in this bus. We're on our way to a hotel. And on the Malaysian highway, on a freaking billboard, I see Lincoln College. There is a freaking college in Malaysia called Lincoln College. I saw that billboard and I just burst into tears and I just felt like, oh my God, I'm in the right place. Now it gets even creepier, the fact that now when I'm placed in my teaching placement in Malaysia, I was located in the state where Lincoln College was. And oftentimes when I like drove into like the inner city of my state, because I was in the jungle, but if you drove like an hour or so inwards, you would kind of arrive at a bigger city. I would like see, when I was driving, I would see like vans from this college that just say like Lincoln College. So it was so funny that Lincoln followed me to Malaysia. So those kind of signs I always think matter more than repeating numbers. And I tend to just think repeating numbers are just, again, like our guide saying hi. But yeah, that's kind of all I got for you guys today. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Again, Artist Way series is still on its way, still coming along. And then a brand new Horoscope Witch series is also coming, which I'm so excited about. It has to do with birth chart interpretation. So it does have to do with learning more about astrology. So I hope you guys are excited for that. And I'm just excited for where this podcast is taking me, and I'm really glad that you guys are along for the ride, and I truly am really grateful for you guys. And one of the things that in my gratitude journal, I always write down, like, you know, when you guys give me a review or when you message me or email me and tell me that you got something out of that episode, that always means like so much to me, and it's so motivating to me. So thanks guys. Thank you guys for listening. Love you guys. Hope you have a great rest of your full moon energy, and let me know how it goes, and I'll see you on the next episode.